Today, I want to, planning to speak on a verse or a couplet which presumably you all know. The couplet is as follows. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshtaya Bhutale Shimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Iti Namine. Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharne Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarne. In this way we offer our respects to Srila Prabhupada. The first of these two verses is a generic verse which is offered with simply a slight change to all the gurus, all the devotees who are accepting disciples in the disciplic line from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, to whom this verse was first offered in the form Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshtaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Iti Namine. And there were three more verses composed which describe the specific qualities and mission of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. The first verse is a generic verse. We offer obeisance to he who is of the same, of course these words can be translated in different ways, but one who is of the same status as Vishnu, who is very dear to Krishna in this world. Mostly those who are dear to Krishna don't come to this horrible place, but those who are very dear to Krishna come to this place. Those who have decided they don't want anything to do with Krishna, they come to this world. And those who are very dear to Krishna, they also come to this world to pick up those who don't want anything to do with Krishna. So that is a generic verse. And then the other verses may be added to describe the particular mission and activities and glories of a particular guru. So for Srila Prabhupada, our most worshipable, Param Puja, A.C. Bhaktivedanta, phones off please. Param Puja Srila Prabhupada, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, he is glorified in a verse that he composed himself, which is unusual, but there are so many unusual things about preaching in the Western countries, which Srila Prabhupada did for the first time successfully on a large scale, preaching Krishna consciousness in the Western world. So he is glorified as servant of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, who is preaching the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and saving the Western world, uplifting the Western world from nirvishesh and shunyavad. You don't want to sit down? Need a chair? Gonna stand all the time? Yeah? So it's very interesting that Srila Prabhupada came to save the West from nirvishesh and shunyavad. It means that the West is very dangerously influenced by nirvishesh and shunyavad. But it's very interesting that no one in the West ever heard of nirvishesh or shunyavad, which they are to be saved from. If we are to save people from something very dangerous, you think they'd know all about it. We should save the world from cell phones, from those towers which are all around, which we don't know what they're doing to our brains, but we can imagine it's not something very good. We should save the world from pollution. We should save the world from America, some people should say. We should save the world from Islamic fanatics, and so on. There are so many perceived dangers. But what is Nirvishesh and Shunyavad? And why does the West need to be safe from it? Why did Srila Prabhupada define his mission in terms of Gauravani Prachar, preaching the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and specifically uplifting, saving the Western world from Nirvishesh and Shunyavad? So, according to, if we ask some scholars, who are the kind of people you ask when there's something obscure to be known, you go and find some scholar who's supposed to know about all these things. So a scholar will tell you that these are terms, Nirvishesh and Shunyavad are terms from Indian philosophy, which is a misleading term, because philosophy is philosophy. Can't really be Indian or non-Indian, but according to the geographical and cultural context, what is called Indian philosophy, Nirvisheshavad, means that vada, that theory or that philosophy, which maintains that there is no variety. Or to put it simply, all is one. Which is within Gaudiya Vaishnava circles generally referred to as Mayavad. This is the term that is used in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. More commonly known as Advaitavad, and more specifically known as Kevala Advaitavad, because there are varieties of Advaitavad. Even some of the Vaishnava philosophies are known as Advaitavad, Shuddha Advaitavad, Vishishta Advaitavad. They're Vaishnava philosophies. But the concept that there is no two-ness, which means not that there is three-ness, but there is oneness only. This is sometimes referred to as Nirvisheshavada. And Shunyavad refers to a particular school of Buddhism. Srila Prabhupada used the term to cover all fields of Buddhism and actually Jainism. The idea that not that all is one, but there is no all at all. Everything is zero. Everything is nothing. Of course, it's very difficult. If you say everything is nothing, you already said that there is everything. So how can it be nothing? So we get caught in some logical absurdities here. But anyway, it's a general term which spans the whole field of mostly Buddhism, because Jainism as a philosophical force is pretty much insignificant in the world today. Of course, Buddhists and Jains fought against each other and among each other. And when we say of Mayavad or Advaitavad, referring to that, generally refers to the, not generally, or always refers to the philosophy which was first expounded in the modern age. In the modern, that means Kali Yuga. In India, in Indian philosophy, to use that misnomer again, modern means the last few thousand years. Whereas in the modern age, in English terms, modern means in the last couple of weeks or so. Depends how fast you're moving with the times. So in the modern age, Shankara, sometimes known as Adi Shankara, Shankaracharya, he made an extensive philosophical system, which has been, although it was predictably was interpreted in various ways, although it's supposed to be without varieties, it was predictably has been interpreted in various ways and has remained tremendously influential up to the present day, so much so that Srila Prabhupada went to the Western countries specifically to deliver people from the Western countries from a philosophy which they had no idea that they needed delivering from, or that even such a philosophy existed. So how can you say that people need delivering from it when they don't even subscribe to it? Shankaracharya, he gave this understanding that with a complex philosophical system, necessarily complex, because it does not tally either with observable reality or with anything that we can imagine. That all is one. When we see that all is not one, I am not you and you are not me, for instance, if you can invite a Mayavadi to lunch and then sit down in front of a big plate of prasadam without giving him any and eat it all yourself. And he may say, well, what about me? And he said, well, you and I are one. So I ate, and so it's all the same. If you want, you can go and eat your stool, because it was one with your body. You don't want dualism, so you can make it one with your body again. Actually, many of the Vaishnava Acharyas, they refuted Mayavad in ways similar to this by taking their propositions to their extreme and showing how they're absurd. So Shankara's philosophy, although it is variously interpreted, says that all is one, and although it doesn't appear to be one, everything here is illusion. But then that again gives a problem, because illusion means it's different from reality, which again gives duality. Please turn your cell phones off. I'm going to make a count how many times I can say this through the lecture. I might curse you to become a Mayavadi. What could be worse than that? The Vaishnava philosophy is that Vishnu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vishnu is supreme. The jivas are all dependent on, subordinate to Vishnu. Oh, I lost my train of thought thanks to the cell phone. Let's go back there. They say that the Mayavadis say that what we perceive, for instance, that I am hungry, or that I am sitting in front of you, this is all illusion. Then how can illusion arise in Brahman, which is all perfect? So that is supposed to be a superimposition on reality. And then one has to become liberated by realizing this. Of course, the Vaishnavas, they say, well, if all is one and one jiva realizes that he is one with the supreme... Please turn your cell phones off. Then all the jivas should be liberated because they're all the same. So there are many inherent self-contradictions in Shankara's philosophy. It has been very influential. What are the reasons for that? Very influential means even up to the present day, many people directly subscribe to that. Just like, for instance, yesterday I was in Mysore and I entered a room where I saw the names of two people given there. One was Sridhara, the other was Chittaranjan, and I said these are both names of Vishnu. And predictably the person who had ushered me into the room said, yes, everyone is Vishnu. It's a common misunderstanding that even pious people are often possessed of. This, according to Shankara's philosophy, there is Ishvara, but Ishvara is not the ultimate reality, but Hare Krishna. Everyone has a cell phone. Kindly take it out. Could everyone just do this? Take out your phone, check to see if it's off. Could everyone please do that? And if it's not, kindly turn it off. Canada translation is outside. So silent, off, vibrator or whatever it is. Please don't disturb with this. So according to Shankara's philosophy, Ishvara is Brahman which has taken a material form, which is offensive to who is actually Ishvara. Because who is actually Ishvara is Vishnu, and his form is never material. So because they say that Brahman is one and is perfect, so in perfection there can be no change, because if it's perfect and it changes, then it's in a different state to being perfect. Therefore, Brahman is unchangeable, doesn't change. That means there's no variety. This is how the logic goes. If there is variety in Brahman, that means one thing is different from something else, but Brahman is perfect. So if something is different, if there is difference, then it cannot be perfect. because it's different, its nature is different, and Brahman is perfect. So this all results from a very narrow way of thinking, a very narrow way of understanding. Chronologically, it appears that the Vaishnava Acharyas have established their philosophies on the basis of, or in answer to, this Nirvisheshavada. So the Mayavadis or the Advaitavadis, they take pleasure in saying that it's the oldest extant system of Vedanta understanding is Shankara's, which is his Shariraka Bhasha, in which he expounded the ideas that Jiva and Ishvara are one, everything is all one, any perception of duality is simply illusion, and so on. So it appears that Vaishnava philosophy is in response to Mayavad philosophy, and chronologically speaking it may be seen as being so, although we understand that time, in material time, goes in cycles, not just of the seasons and years, but the whole universe, as is all that be in this world, as is stated in the Upanishads and is inherent in the first statement about Brahman in the Vedanta Sutra, Janmadyasya Yataha, that the whole material cosmos comes into being, remains for some time, is again destroyed, and then again comes into being, and again remains, and again destroyed. The substratum of that is Brahma. So, Brahman, the Vaishnavas maintain, is not, as Shankara says, nirvishesh. He is not that he is without qualities. On the contrary, he is ananta kalyana guna vishishta. He is specified, characterized by, unlimited in number and in quality, unlimited all auspicious qualities. So the Vaishnava philosophies, they chronologically they appear to be in response to, from our vantage point in time, they may appear to be in response to Shankaracharya's, what is now known as Kevaladvaitavad. But Vishnu is eternal. Vaishnavism is eternal. And in one sense, Shankara did a good job by formulating a philosophy which expresses the sinful desires of sinful people in this world to equate themselves with the Supreme. So the Vaishnava Acharya's response to that is defeats point by point all the incorrect statements of Shankara and his followers, and establish that the Supreme is Vishnu. Now, it's very tricky, this Mayavad, because they also accept Sagun Brahma. Not only Nirgun Brahma. But Sagun Brahma means the Brahman, which is ultimately Nirgun, but superficially accepts some qualities and appears thus as Krishna, as Rama, as Shiva, to act for the benefit of the world, which doesn't really exist. So many people, because it seems to foster bhakti, they speak of an Ishta Devata, which means that you can choose any god that you like and worship as Sagun Brahma, and doing that will help you to ultimately come to the understanding that Brahman is Nirgun. So there are many people who presume themselves to be Vaishnavas, but who have this understanding, or are infected by this understanding, which ultimately kills bhakti. Because bhakti means to accept the eternality of Vishnu's supremacy and the eternality of the jiva's dependence upon and subordination to Vishnu. Vishnu is eternal. Bhakti is eternal. It is not that on achieving mukti, bhakti stops. Or on achieving jnana, as they say, it stops. Bhakti stops. So it is subtly undermining, insidiously undermining the whole basis of Shuddha Bhakti, or pure devotion to Vishnu, which is based on the understanding that Vishnu does not represent something, or that the form of Vishnu in the temple is not a representation. Vishnu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead eternally. This idea of Ishta Devata, that you can choose any form you like to worship because they're all different forms of the same formless, so they say, has given rise, even though people don't know it, most people are not philosophical, especially in the modern age, has given rise to such absurdities as worshipping Sai Baba number one or Sai Baba number two or any other such rascals as being God. Because, well, if you want, you can think, you can worship, and you get benefit on both sides. You get your material desires fulfilled, and then if at any point in time you get fed up of this material world, which doesn't seem to be likely very soon, but because you've been worshipping the Sagun Brahma, at some point you'll merge into the oneness and yourself become Sai Baba. Something like that. Like I say, most people don't think about it too much, but this is the underlying these are some of the underlying misconceptions. So actually this Advaita Vedanta is not very widespread in the Western world. There have been attempts to some attempts to propagate something like that in the form of the Ram Krishna Mission and the Self-Realization Fellowship, Paramahamsa Yogananda, all this. Buddhism has become popular in the Western world among some people, that Shunyavad, which is even more elusive and difficult to understand. Now, these systems of philosophy, Nirvishesh and Shunyavad, have in traditional Indian culture at the higher levels, at the philosophical level, been the subject of endless debate. Most people can't understand the subtleties and the difficulty, the complexities. Actually, Vaishnava philosophy is very straightforward, that there is Bhagavan, the Supreme Controller. We are all subordinate to him. Brahman is one. How do the Vaishnavas get around this, that Brahman is one and so there cannot be variety in perfection? Vaishnava response to that is, well, why not? Why does the idea that if something changes, it becomes, if the perfect changes, then it is no longer perfect, that is a material estimation. Rather, the supreme perfect generates all kinds of forms and entities which are also perfect without losing his superiority. As far as this material world is concerned, it is not a complete illusion, in total illusion. It is real in one sense. We can't say it's totally unreal. That's the point that the Mayavadis say, that Brahman is perfect, this world is perceivably imperfect, but this world is, everything is Brahman, therefore this world is illusion. It doesn't actually exist. That is the Mayavadi's contention. Because if there's only Brahman, and Brahman is perfect, but we perceive this world, therefore that perception is an illusion. It doesn't exist. But the Vaishnavas say that this world is real. Everything is Brahman, and this world is real, and this world is full of suffering. How can that be? This world, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given this understanding, other Vaishnavas also, that this world is not the supreme Brahman, but it is the transformation of the energy of Brahman. Brahman is perfect and complete. Shakti, Shakti Matar, Abhedaha. The possessor of the Shakti and the Shakti, which are referred to in Vedanta Sutra, they are non-different. But the very fact that there are two terms means that there is difference also. So how there is difference and how there is non-difference, how to understand this without resorting to philosophical impossibilities, such as saying that everything here is an illusion, that is explained in the Vaishnava philosophy. So the Mayavad, Shunyavad, they're very complex because they attempt to explain something which is not actually explainable. And then when it comes down to when they're actually stripped down to their logical absurdities, and then they say, well, you can't understand because it's beyond words anyway. Although they expend many words in trying to explain it, and when it is shown that it doesn't make any sense, they say, well, you can't understand. You see, you're not advanced enough to understand. And in this way, they avoid the issue. So these are very complex systems of philosophy. And although the Vaishnava philosophy is, in essence, very simple, it has necessarily answered the complexity of Nirvishesha and Shunyavada. The basic philosophy is very simple, but the energies of the Supreme Lord and the Supreme Lord Himself are complex in the sense that they have potencies beyond that which we can understand with our tiny intelligence. So it's not that Vaishnava philosophy is simplistic or for less intelligent people. It can answer all the complexities posed by the Mayavadis and Shunyavadis. Now, as Kali Yoga progresses, people become more stupid day by day. Anyway, in this material world, everyone is stupid. That's the first qualification for being in this world. But the stupidity increases as Kali Yoga progresses. And very few people can understand Sanskrit, let alone the complex philosophical systems which have been expounded in the Sanskrit language to make the concepts of Mayavad easy for people to understand. Certain demons, according to Vaishnava parlance, have promoted various slogans which purport to encapsulate the Mayavad philosophy. Among them, the most famous slogan is Joto Mot Toto Pot. As many opinions, that many paths. Or all paths are the same. Which is understood to mean that, well, whatever you do, it's all okay. Now, it is this kind of sloganized, cheap Mayavad and Shunyavad that Srila Prabhupada had to save the West from. It's rampant in India, as again epitomized by Sai Baba worship, there's Babas and Ammas and Appas and all, all kinds of Dadas and Gundas and avatars and posing themselves as God. This would not be possible for people who are extraordinary only in the sense of having extraordinary shamelessness and gumption, which, well, that's another word for shamelessness, the boldness to promote themselves as being God, and people believe it. They're lazy to understand what is the meaning of God, and they have a vague idea, which they're not very anxious to upgrade, that God is no word said, inexpressible, just everything. And if you want, you find God in this Baba or this Bapa or whatever. So that is modern Hinduism. Of course, it's more complex than that. These are generalizations. And in the Western world also, among those who consider themselves, I don't know what they consider themselves, really. Probably John could tell me better. They're followers of Eastern philosophy or enlightened or whatever. There's this very common idea that all is one. That there is the light that we have to merge into. In the Western kind of Mayavad that is that sometimes attempted by taking what in the 1960s and 70s was called consciousness expanding substances. And there are many yoga schools which teach a similar kind of... Well, that's really the problem. They don't really teach any philosophy, any systematic philosophy, but just some vague idea that all is one. And to study the whole phenomenon would take quite some time, how some Germans, especially in the 19th century, started studying the Upanishads in translations, and then there were books written, such as The Glass Bead Game, which got translated into English and gave people an idea of this oneness. Now, that idea of oneness or nothingness is popular in the Western world. Quite recently, or some months ago, the Dalai Lama, as he's called, that I suppose gives him a sense of being very sacred, like saying the Pope, the Dalai Lama. Well, cell phones have stopped, but now creaking doors have started. A little oil on the door would solve that problem. It's a good idea to put oil on doors. Any volunteers? No. Okay. Creaking doors. So he celebrated his birthday in a park in Dallas, I think it was. And some 100,000 or 200,000 people came to hear him speak. So that's quite a lot of people. Still, most people don't directly subscribe to Buddhism or the vague kind of yoga, enlightenment or whatever. Most people in the West, well, the West is a very big term. In America, there are many Christians. There are many committedly non-Christians. There are in Northern Europe, France, many other countries. Most people don't care at all about religion or philosophy, and in England, at least, I know, as I was raised there, and it seems to be still the same today, it is practically socially taboo to even raise the topic of religion, to even talk about it. It's considered to be something, so it just causes a disturbance. So cultured people, they don't talk about religion, just don't even think about it. So how is it that Srila Prabhupada is saving the West from impersonalism and voidism? When people have not heard of it, they never even heard of these terms, nirvishesha, shunyavada. And those that do, so many people practically committedly don't subscribe to any philosophy whatsoever. Although, of course, they do, but they don't have any creed by which they live. And those who do live by a creed, still the number of Christians far exceeds those who directly subscribe to being Buddhists or yogis or whatever. Oh, this is a very big topic. How even unstatedly that even people who believe in God in the Abrahamic religions, that means Judaism, Christianity, Islam, they either they say that we cannot understand God, it's too great, or they have no information about Him. Just He's the Alpha and the Omega, and that's about it. He created the world, and they don't really know much more about their scripture gives very little information about Him. Or the major mistake in Christianity is that they equate Jesus, who presented Himself as an emissary of God, they present Him as being directly God Himself, which is Mayavad, because Jesus is a jiva, and He's been equated with Bhagavan. So, another way that Mayavad or impersonalism, this is the English term that Srila Prabhupada used, impersonalism is rampant in the Western world, in people's dealings with each other, and in the materialism in philosophy or science. Materialism means the doctrine that there is only matter, there's nothing spiritual, and materialism is generally understood to mean wanting to have lots of money and enjoy opulence. The two go largely go hand in hand. So materialism, which seems to be a rejection of anything spiritual, and Mayavad is supposed to be spiritual, but it comes down to being material, because ultimately impersonalism leads to materialism, because it defines the spiritual as having no qualities, whereas the nature of the jiva is to have bhakti for Vishnu. The nature of the jiva is to desire to enjoy in variety, in relation to Vishnu, in service to Vishnu. So if we say that the ultimate is variety-less, and the path to achieve that purported bliss of merging into the variety-lessness, the path to achieve that is very difficult, then what happens is that people, they may pay lip service to that, but they end up being materialists, because people want enjoyment. And there's no enjoyment, there's no happiness in the quest for Brahman realization. So even the ninth class or tenth class happiness of materialism, it is immediately available and it is tangible. Whereas that of Brahman realization, first of all, no one can understand it anyway. And then to achieve it seems almost impossible. Therefore, people end up as materialists. So impersonalism and materialism, they go hand in hand. And we see that Srila Prabhupada, he arrived first in America at the Boston Harbor, and he saw the warehouses, the machines, all very drab, and that, oh, such a big subject to get into, so many subjects, how the architecture in the Western world simply, what's the technical term for that. Simply practical, that's all. Just no aestheticism. Previously, all over the world, if a carpenter made a chair for someone, he'd make a little carving and design and make it very beautiful. But now it's mass-produced plastic chairs in factories, just functional. That's all, no beauty. So a very impersonal, drab society in which people live in big cities surrounded by people but with no friends, no relationships. Impersonalism wants to, the Mayavad philosophy means that there is no relationships, no love. They'll speak of love, definitely Mayavadis, they speak of love and peace and goodwill, but all in very vague terms. Actually, to speak of peace and love and goodwill without specifying that love means love for Krishna, and actual love can only expand from that. Any other kind of love is simply an illusion. Without specifying that, simply the Mayavadis speak of love, and people get this idea of some kind of cosmic love in which you love everybody. But you have no particular affection for anybody. What's that other? The other kind of slogans that Mayavadis come up with. What was that? That the Jobi Hua Wo Acha. Oh yeah. Everything is good. Everything that has happened is good. Yesterday, I was handed a leaflet by a man who's promoting this. He'd gave me a leaflet called The Essence of the Gita, and I knew immediately, oh, it's that stupid thing again. So I opened it up, and inside it said, the first thing, everything that has happened is good. So I asked him, which verse of Bhagavad Gita is this? He said, well, I don't know, because I just got it from a book called The Essence of Bhagavad Gita. I told him, there's no such verse in Bhagavad Gita, nor does it make any sense. You try going to Israel and telling them that Hitler was good. See what happens. If you find someone comes up to you and says, my child just died. And you say, oh, good. Is it good? Everything is good. But in Gita, as I explained to this man, Krishna says that this world is dukhalaya. It is a world of suffering and sorrow. How can you say that everything is good? So afterwards I was told the example. There's this story. Where does that story come from? Of the king who, in a sword fighting practice, lost his finger. How did he lose his finger in the story? Yeah, that comes later. Anyway, the king lost his finger, and the minister, when he saw this, he said, oh, very good. He'd been reading The Essence of the Gita by some Gita Press Mayavadis. So the king locked him up, and he was a Brahmin, so he didn't kill him. He locked up the minister for saying that it's good that the king lost his finger. Sometime later, the king went hunting in the forest. He got separated from his retinue and was captured by what nowadays the British gave the term Adivasis, tribal people. You're all Adivasis, by the way. You're all descended from, I presume, from different dynasties. Anyway, that's another topic altogether. So, he was separated by some tribal people who wanted to offer him in sacrifice, human sacrifice. So they captured him, and the king thought, oh, see that the minister was saying, Jobi hote wo acha hote. But you see, now I'm captured. I should have executed that minister. Then when they were dressing him and preparing him for the sacrifice, they saw one finger is missing. So according to the rules, you can't offer an animal or a human in sacrifice whose any limb is missing. So they let him go. So the king found his way out of the jungle, came back to his kingdom and released the minister and said, you were right, it was good I got my finger cut off. So this demonstrates that everything is good. Stupid example. Completely stupid example. So many people may lose their finger. It's not that in every case something good comes like that comes of it. It's something that might happen in one case, but it doesn't happen in every case. Nor can we say that everything is good. There was a tsunami and so many people were killed. Good. You know, what kind of monster are you to have such a philosophy? But this all comes from Mayavada. People without thinking, they think, well, everything is all good, everything is all nice. Without differentiating between what is actually good and what is harmful. In an absolutely anti-philosophical way, without even thinking about it, they say everything is all good. If you even think about it even slightly, you can understand that everything is not all good. So what happens is by making some slogans like everything is good, by making some slogans, all paths are the same. Love all, serve all these slogans which sound very nice, people take these slogans and without any philosophical depth whatsoever, without even slightly entering the path of atato brahma jignyasa, of trying to understand what is the nature of reality, they just accept these slogans and are misled. They should take the Vaishnava sutras. Jive, forget all this. Love all, serve all, with no focus of what love or service means. They should take rather Jive Surup Hoy Krishna Nitya Das. You want a slogan? Here's a slogan. Then you have to understand what is the meaning of that. So people are very shallow in their thinking. Practically they don't think at all. What to speak of thinking deeply. This, what we can call Mayavad, we could call classic Mayavad, in which there is very deep philosophy, but it's all nonsense. And then there's the modern equivalents, both in India and the West, which just reduce to slogans, and it's all nonsense. So Srila Prabhupada used these terms to state that to save the Western countries from them, of course that the India has to be saved from that also. That goes without saying. But the main danger in the world, what is the main danger in the world? What is the main problem in the world? It's not ecological imbalance or terrorism or economic crisis. But the main problem is this, the main problem facing all of human society is this misconception that either there is no ultimate reality or that the ultimate reality has no form, that we are all one. So this is the real, if we go deep into what is the root cause of all these problems, it's these philosophies which in the mind of people legitimize their lives, which they are leading without surrendering to Krishna. You may say, well, most people don't have a philosophy. Most people don't, they never thought out a philosophy. Well, that's true. But everyone has a worldview, even without thinking what it is. Most people just take it from what they get at school, what they get from other people, what they get from the TV, what they get from the newspapers. Everyone has some kind of platform on which they act. Some consideration of what is desirable, what is not desirable. So what is desirable actually is surrender to Krishna. What is not desirable is anything else. But the Mayavadis have merged it all into one. It's all good, whatever you do. It's all nice. You surrender to Krishna? You like to do Krishna Bhakti? Very good, very nice, they'll say. And you may think, oh, these are very good people. They like Krishna Bhakti. But then, whatever you do, they'll say, it's all good, it's all nice. Which is a very dangerous philosophy, to say that everything is good, everything is nice, and not differentiate, because nirvishesha, no differentiation, they don't differentiate between what is good and what is not good, between what is proper and what is not proper, between Vishnu and his Shaktis. So Srila Prabhupada, as any Vaishnava, as any bona fide Vaishnava Acharya, defined his mission in terms of saving people from these misleading philosophies or understandings. So it's very dangerous to merge back into that. We can respect, to some extent, Mayavadis who actually follow something. We can respect that. If they actually study the Vedas, even with misinterpretations, they're actually following the rules of sannyas, that we can respect. Although we reject their philosophy totally. Then there are the Neo-Mayavadis who are more popular. There's one very prominent in the world at the present time, based here in Bangalore, who is the stereotypical nonsense Mayavadi. Long beard, flowing robes, permanent smile, and no clear philosophy. Even shamelessly, if anyone tries to talk any philosophy, he'll shift his position moment to moment. Expert in word jugglery, but no clear idea of what is reality. Because they are demons, they want to avoid Vishnu and promote themselves as being important. Instead of teaching what Krishna has taught, Bhagavad Gita as it is, they put together some slogans and blend it with a few misinterpretations here and there of Bhagavad Gita and the Upanishads to give themselves some kind of look as if they actually know something from Shastra. And in this way, cheat people. We ourselves should not be so shallow. At least those who claim themselves to be followers of Srila Prabhupada should not be so shallow as to be misled by such people. Nor should we partake in the kind of cheapness that typifies them. Srila Prabhupada gave us his books, which he said is his most important contribution, in which he has in great detail presented Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam, scientific knowledge of the personality of Godhead. By studying those books, we should understand what is real, what is unreal. What is real is Vishnu and Vishnu Bhakti. What is unreal is any conception outside of that. So, of course, that may sound just like some dogmatic statement, but Srila Prabhupada in his books, with reference to Shastra, or in commentaries on Shastra, has exhaustively established the actual philosophy or understanding of reality. So devotees of Krishna should be dignified in following the previous acharyas and not cheap. Every Vaishnava is meant to be a guru. Guru means heavy, not laghu. Laghu means light, fluffy. Just like these Mayava, light and fluffy. And that's it. That's all they have. Vaishnavas are guru. They're heavy. Heavy with knowledge of distinguishing sat from asat. Heavy with the sense of responsibility that they have to carry the mission of the acharyas and establish Vishnu Bhakti as the only dharma of every living being. The Vaishnavas, they should, especially Vaishnavas, should study the books of Srila Prabhupada and become free from all pettiness. Original Mayavad, what we could call classic Mayavad, at least we could say the followers were not petty. They perform austerities, follow rules and regulations, study Shastra. Whereas modern Mayavad is petty, fluffy, cheap, as is everything and everyone pretty much in the modern age. Petty, fluffy, and cheap. These are three terms which apply pretty much to everyone in the modern age. Even what people think very important, develop the economy, this, that, but what for? Develop the economy so people can get a new iPad, and then they can, you can get a degree in, what is this, video animation, how to make cartoons. People are stupid. Vaishnavas should not partake in that stupidity. Vaishnavas should, by studying the books of Srila Prabhupada, come to the platform of reality, not be swept away by the petty tide of the modern age. One thing, I don't mind me saying this, I see in many places I go to that when I'm lecturing, it's almost as if the devotees present are waiting for the next joke. They expect that the lecture should be a series of jokes. Whereas in Srila Prabhupada's lectures, although occasionally he would make a philosophical point by humor, and the devotees would laugh. Generally in his lectures, he was very, very grave, presenting the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So let us understand our grave responsibility as Vaishnavas, as followers of Srila Prabhupada, to understand this philosophy very deeply and not be petty. There are so many ways in the name of Vaishnavism that we can be petty. I, me and mine. This is the pettiness of the material world. Materialistic people are petty on the platform of my home, my country, my sports team, my career. And it's possible in the name of Vaishnavism to be petty on the platform of my zone, my temple, my devotees. They belong to me. So we should not be petty. Vaishnava should be guru, is one term for Vaishnavas. And a Vaishnava should be udara dhi, broad intelligence, broad consciousness. Anyway, there are so many things that could be said. I've already spoken for probably more time than I was scheduled for. So what's next? Questions? Should I take questions? No. Is there an extension mic? Or cordless mic? For this? I see a cordless microphone there. Oh, you have to set it up? Is it? It's a whole thing to set it up. Alright.
Maharaj, particularly to do with this Mayavad philosophy, first and foremost, is Shankaracharya an authorized acharya?
Is Shankaracharya an authorized acharya? Question.
Secondly, was it the will of the Lord that he had to propagate this philosophy on time, place and circumstances?
And secondly, is it the will of the Lord that he propagated this philosophy in time, place and circumstance? This is the kind of question where the questioner really wants to say something, but they put it in the form of a question with the aim of the speaker answering it in the way they want them to say it.
Not really, Maharaj, because in Chaitanya Charitamrita there's specific reference on this particular aspect.
Yeah, I know. But you want me to make that point. You think I should have made that point. All right, it's a good point. I'll make it. It's a good point. Yes, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu refers to Shankara as Acharya. And he explains, and that is further explained in the purports given by Srila Prabhupada, that Shankara, he is Shankara. Shankara, who is known as Adi Shankara. He is Lord Shiva, who on the order of his master, Narayana, came to this world to teach a philosophy which is very inauspicious. Why would Narayan send Lord Shiva to do that? Well, Lord Shiva, he does the inauspicious things. There's a purpose for that. There are purposes. One thing, because people, they want to be misled, so Shankara helps them with that. But there are some good points also in the Lord's long-term plan, that Adi Shankara, he established the importance of the Veda in opposition to the Buddhists who rejected the Veda. He provided a platform for the later Vaishnava Acharyas to disconstruct Shankara's wrong interpretations. So Shankara is accepted by the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as an acharya, but not, you could say conventionally, he's called an acharya, in as much as he expounded the Vedas, but not in the true or fullest sense of the term, because a Vaishnava guru nasyad, Vaishnava Svapacha Guruhu. One who is not a Vaishnava cannot actually be a guru, whereas a Vaishnava is always a guru. So inasmuch as Shankara presented a misleading philosophy, he cannot in the true sense of the term be called an acharya. But conventionally, he may be. There should be a book written. There are thousands of books that should be written about Shankaracharya, giving the life and teachings and purpose, why he was sent to this world, and refutation of his teachings. And of course, Bhajagovindam, Bhajagovindam. That should also be there. Yeah, then? Jagannath Ashtakam, some people say it was written by Shankaracharya.
Maharaj, the Nirvishesha and Shunyavada existed even when Ramanacharya and Madhvacharya that purpose was to smash or verify his philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
But they somehow were existing even when
Yeah, so what's the question?
So the purpose was to nullify this philosophy for the purpose of coming to this world. But still the same, this philosophy seems to be
So what has been stated is that Shankara's philosophy was prominent. Ramanuja came and he opposed that philosophy and established the Vaishnava philosophy. And then again Madhva came and with a different system of philosophy established, not fully different, but in many ways different, established Vishnu as supreme, and philosophically defeated the Mayavadis. So how is it that this philosophy is still around if it's been defeated by the Vaishnavas? Well, one reason is, as I already stated, is that when the Mayavadis, when the absurdities of their philosophy are exposed, they simply say, well, it's all words. You see, you're just talking words. You can't understand the inner essence. So in this way, they avoid having been defeated. As long as people are listening to them, they'll go on talking for hours. But when a Vaishnava points out that what they're saying is nonsense and they can't refute it, they say, oh, it's all, you're just talking words. This is not only in India, in the West also. It's the common trick of Mayavada. It's just words. The ultimate is beyond words. So this way they escape. And people who want to be cheated continue to be cheated by such cheating, because it is attractive to the conditioned soul in his perverted consciousness of imagining himself to be separate from Vishnu. It appeals to the perverted consciousness of one who wants to think, Ishvaro hamaham bhogi, I am the supreme controller, I am the enjoyer. When he gets frustrated in his attempts to enjoy this world, then he thinks, well, okay, there's no enjoyment, but at least I can still be Ishvara. So it appeals to sinful people who are insincere and dishonest. And therefore it goes on. Because especially in Kali Yuga, people are insincere and dishonest. So philosophically we should oppose this, and also we should have plenty of Harinam and Prasadam distribution to purify people's consciousness so they can even begin to understand this. And it is very important that Vaishnavas understand this philosophy very clearly. The sameness and difference of the jiva with Bhagavan. Because if we don't understand this philosophy clearly, what does that mean? That means we're unclear. And without a clear understanding of Vaishnava Siddhanta, then even our chanting, we may say, well, just chant, and, but without a clear understanding of that we are supposed to surrender to Vishnu, then our chanting will not have the same effect, because it will be materially tinged. Yeah, is there any other question? Then you haven't understood Vaishnava philosophy. If you think that by criticizing Mayavad you're not being humble, you haven't understood anything about Vaishnava philosophy. It's better that you don't give classes. Vaishnava humility is expressed by pointing out all that is inimical to Vaishnavism. If you think that humility is something like the mundane humility of showing that I'm very humble without being without taking up the service of Vishnu as Hanuman did, in pure humility, burning Lanka out of his sense of total subordination to Rama. If you haven't understood this, please don't give classes. First understand what is Vaishnava philosophy before you try to teach it. Hanuman's anger is millions and unlimitedly times greater than your misconception of humility. There are so many philosophies present. What is the difference between philosophy and truth? There is no difference, actually. What goes on as philosophy in this world, Srila Prabhupada called it philosophy. There's a joke from Prabhupada. You're allowed to laugh. Actual philosophy means to understand what is the truth. Everything else that goes on in the name of philosophy is an excuse by which people try to justify their existence of not surrendering to Krishna. I'll finish there. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Yeah.